Welcome to Growing Places, a podcast about all things economic development right here in the Sioux Metro. Growing Places is brought to you by the Sioux Metro Growth Alliance and our supporters. Welcome back to Growing Places, your regional roundup sharing the stories of economic development in the Sioux Metro. I'm Miranda Basie, and joining me today is Jeremy Risty. I see that big grin on your face as I say that. And I have to tell you, saying Jeremy Risty feels a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Miranda's a former student, loved having her in class. I actually had all of her sisters in class, too. We were definitely blessed with the Kane family. So, it's fine. It's fine. It's actually kind of enjoyable.
I like it.
Yeah, that's the fun part of teaching is not just teaching, but watching them grow up and having relationships with them as they grow on. And
then I run into you at the breweries. And,
that's true. Yes. That is a little bit different dynamic, but I enjoy that part, too. It's good.
I'm really excited to bring you into the conversation today. One, because Brandon just celebrated a really big milestone, and you play a little bit of part in that. So before we get to the weekend festivities, which I know were a blast, a little bit about your background. You are a high school history teacher in Brandon. So what are you currently teaching? Because that changes sometimes, right?
It does. Actually, it just changed again this year. So far at Brandon, I've taught everything from freshman PE, which did I have you in freshman PE? I don't remember.
No, I didn't think so. Okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I taught freshman PE the first couple of years I got here. So I was freshman PE and American history. I've taught freshman geography. I've taught American government. I taught a really cool class for several years that I took from Mr. Grody called Street Law. Just a great class that kind of talks a little bit about what are your rights and responsibilities as an American citizen kind of thing. And then in the last kind of 8 years or so, 9 years or so, I've taught a dual credit American history class through Northern State University. It's called the program is called Rising Scholars, but the class number, if you will, is called History 151, 152. So it's two different classes, three credits each semester. So students who take my class get 6 college credits moving forward.
And you're also involved in some other things. Football coach.
Correct. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
You wear a lot of hats because I'm not done yet. No,
that's true. That is true. Yeah.
Yeah. So you also have family that you're running after.
Correct. I have 3 children. My oldest, Anna, is a sophomore this next year at the University of South Dakota. My son, Thomas, is going to be a senior this year. And my youngest daughter, Emma, is going to be a junior this year. So I'm going to be an empty nester in 2 years, and I have no idea what I'm going to do with myself.
Well, you're clearly involved in enough that I don't think that'll be a huge issue for you.
Well, that's true. That is true. Yeah, I'll find something to occupy my time. So
then you're also involved with the Brandon Historical Society. And that is something that I don't think is as easy to maybe grasp or understand what that means, what that entails as maybe, you know, teaching and coaching and family life is. So could you maybe just explain a little bit about what that is? Maybe what the mission is and what your role is.
Sure. Yeah. I'm president of the Brandon Historical Society. We are a group of volunteer community members who are dedicated to preserving and kind of portraying the history of the Brandon and the area community, the Brandon community, which includes Rowena and Corson and, you know, just some of the other area towns there. So, for example, to give you an example, there was an old cabin from a local settler that was built in 1870. And most recently, we worked with the city of Brandon to get that relocated to a city park. And we restored it and we opened it and things like that. It's a very challenging role because, as you know, somebody who went to Brandon Valley yourself, Brandon is a very old town, but the vast majority of the people are transplants.
Yes.
And so it's very, very, very difficult to get them to care about a community, the history of a community in which they don't really have any roots.
Yeah.
So that's a real challenge that we find.
Yeah. And, you know, as we were kind of prepping and talking about bringing you in for this episode, it dovetails nicely with the 50th celebration of Brandon as a town. And one of the things that you just hit on that I think is something I'd like to just dive right into right away is getting that appreciation or creating that care for history. Mm-hmm. And, you know, clearly as a history teacher yourself and president of the Brandon Historical Society, you see an importance that history has in what life is like today and what it's going to be in the future.
Right.
And this might be a loaded question, and I'm expecting you're going to talk for hours on end. But what place is there for that that historical information or these memories, if you will, for folks who are maybe looking more forward than they are back?
Well, quite frankly, I think it's essential. I you can't know where you're going until you know where you've been. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the teaching of history and history itself has become so politicized in the last several years, and people are looking for angles and things like that. And I'm not here to talk about politics by any stretch, but I think that it's unfortunate that politics has entered the conversation, because history is an essential part of understanding who we are, not only at the local level, state level, national level, but global level. And so I think it's really, really important for us to understand where we've been, who we've been, what we've done, and understand how that can inform our decisions moving forward. I think that's absolutely essential for to know and to understand and to correct behaviors, procedures, ideas, goals as necessary. And you can't understand that unless you actually research, study, know history.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, my mind goes to a term that we use a lot in economic development: case study.
Mm.
And, you know, when we think about doing some sort of project for a community or town or whatever that might look like, we would say, hey, what are some case studies? And really, in effect, what we're saying is, who's done this or something like it? And how did it go?
Right.
What did they do?
Right. Absolutely.
So when you think about the Brandon Historical Society, and you talked about, you know, that cabin and relocating it, moving it, restoring it, that I think is an example of some collaboration. You know, we see that in other ways in economic development. And I would love to get a little bit more insight onto how that project came about and maybe what that collaboration was.
Yeah, absolutely. That's clearly been our biggest project of the last, well, ever since I've been a member, and I've been president like 10 years. No kidding. I'm like, you guys realize who you're electing here, right?
Good Lord. Get rid of you.
I know, right? That scraping sound is the bottom of the barrel. It was looking back on it, I always kind of joke around that it was a labor of love, but emphasize the word labor because it was a lot of work. So, I'll try to keep this as short as possible. Essentially, there was this cabin built by one of the first local settlers in 1870. It was overlooking, as Brandon Gal, you maybe know that it was overlooking, Split Rock Creek right across from, Hidden Valley Golf Course.
Yeah.
Not too far from like Redwood Boulevard and stuff like that. And the problem, though, is that it was just this lone cabin. It was kind of becoming dilapidated and stuff like that. But it was also on a, virtual gold mine, because it was an empty lot in a town like Brandon that's growing by leaps and bounds. So the family was like, well, we want to sell this lot, but we don't want to destroy the cabin. So they reached out to us. And we, of course, our first thought was yes. But as soon as you say yes, then you got to be like, OK, well, where are we going to put it? It creates all these other dilemmas and questions. So we immediately reached out to the city, and we asked the city, hey, would it be okay if we relocate this to some land? In our communications with the city, we found that the best location would probably be Pioneer Park, which is a local park kind of overlooking that Split Rock River Valley and stuff like that, or Split Rock Creek Valley. And it actually worked out really well, because Pioneer Park is the tail end, the southern end of the land that the Pioneer used to own. So it's still technically on his land. It's just moved. So the city, we collaborated with the city. We collaborated with local citizens. A lot of people donated their time and money. We had a local contractor or local cement guy who poured the pad for us. The concrete for the pad was donated. We reached out to various other members of the community. We reached out to the state as well. We're like, we've never done this before. State of South Dakota, how you guys have several cabins. What did you do? Where do we go? How do we do this? And so we definitely, it was a private you know, volunteer kind of collaboration on many levels. And we ultimately found a contractor who kind of specializes in kind of restoring historical buildings and such. And we gathered up as many volunteers as we could. Obviously, Mr. Christensen was vital in getting a bunch of football players to help us. And, you know, my family dove in as well. And Mr. Christensen dove in. I mean, he and I nailed every single plank of the floor that was restored. And so it was just a really neat, several years long, but very, very neat project that we're really proud of.
And I think that getting so many folks involved and just going through those channels, one was probably exhausting and frustrating
for a right now person. Correct. Yes. Yes.
But also, I assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's also some opportunity there for more exposure or more connections and maybe more learning.
Absolutely.
Was there anything in that process that maybe surprised you or maybe redirected the way that you were going about things?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This was overall a very positive process, but I don't mean to sound negative, but, you know, I was kind of surprised by some of the comments from some of the citizens about us not maybe doing as much as we should. Maybe we should be doing more. You know,
And then did you say where are your membership dues?
You know, it's interesting. one gentleman in particular kept, you know, kind of a Facebook troll, so to speak. And he kept, you know, making these comments, and I'm like, hey, we're working. I have an extra hammer. I'm sure I'll see you there. And then as soon as I said that, he kind of stopped. But I mean, it was just, you know, we got support, but I was a little bit, you know, a little disappointed by some of the negativity. Yeah. But overall, you know, as a volunteer and as a community member, you just gotta, you know, you gotta push that stuff aside and you gotta focus on the positive, because if you just dwell on the negative, nothing's ever gonna get done. So, you know, I was a little surprised by that, but I was really surprised by how easy the city was to work with. They were just like, hey, whatever you guys want to do. I'm like, well, can we do this? Sure. Well, how do you want this? What do you want? You know, it was very, very, encouraging, to work with, you know, and I had virtually no dealings with the city prior to that. But they were very, very helpful, very easy to deal with. And you know, there's other organizations that helped as far as, grants and things of that nature. So, just the, you know, kind of opened my eyes to the level of, the various levels to which people and communities and organizations will go to do the right thing and to help.
Yeah. And speaking of multiple organizations, multiple just things all coming together, let's talk about 50th celebration.
Please. Yeah.
Because there were a lot of people that showed up to make it. It was a full weekend of festivities.
Yes. Yes.
And it's fun for the transplants, if you will, for lack of better phrasing, that are enjoying life today in Brandon. Mm-hmm. But it also was important to you and the Brandon Historical Society folks. So tell us about this 50th celebration.
Right. So my wife and I were on the 50th anniversary committee and I felt that obviously as president of the Brandon Historical Society, that was kind of, you know, a natural fit.
Yeah.
My wife is president of the local Brandon Valley Optimist Club. And I've been a member for years as well. I've been past president and such. So, and we put on an event called Hometown Days, which I'll get to in a little bit. But basically what we wanted to do was make this a celebration of all that Brandon is, was, and will be.
Yeah.
And so we came up, you know, we kind of started with these brainstorming sessions where we're like, okay, well, here's an idea, you know, kind of stereotypical stuff, you know, throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. And we kind of narrowed it down. And I say narrowed it down. We still had probably 40 events going on.
Yes.
I mean, it was so crazy.
I was out at the baseball field. So I'm like, oh, hey, there's a hot dog feed right over there.
And I was there. I was like, I think Brandon's over there. Yep. I should go pull her up. On Friday night, we had a free hot dog feed, and we had a movie in the park. And it was, people are like, well, why did you, it was Disney's Robin Hood. And they're like, why did you choose that movie? And I was like, well, because it came out in 1973, the year we were incorporated.
I like it.
Yeah. So we kind of tried to stay with that theme. But we had a free movie, and then we had with free popcorn, and then we had fireworks that were donated by a local business person. And then Saturday was just chaos. We had all kinds of stuff going on. We had actually for the Historical Society, our old 1916 school building, we call it 1916 because it was built in 1916. Unfortunately, once it started going out of disuse in about the 1980s, 1990s, it kind of fell into a state of disrepair, and it was razed in 2016. So on its 100th anniversary, it was torn down, which was kind of sad. But luckily, as the Historical Society president, we were able to the district allow us to salvage a bunch of stuff that we hope to repurpose in the future. But so we had a marker dedication to the 1916 school building. And so I was busy there. We had a lot of people at the cabin. We had a lot of people at the museum. And then as soon as I got done with that, then I went over to Hometown Days, which was in the high school commons. And it's a free family friendly event that the Brandon Valley Optimist Club gets donations from local businesses and sponsors. And we had face painting. We had animals. We had inflatables. We had laser tag. We had, princes and princesses and superheroes. And we had food, and we had just all kinds of stuff. We estimate that there was probably about 2,500 people that came through.
Wow.
Which is by far and away the most we've ever had.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just crazy nuts. And it was crazy when I got there at like 1:30, and they're like, this is slow. I'm like, oh my gosh, there's been tons of people here. It was so cool. We gave away like 8 bikes and some Razor scooters, and it was just awesome.
I'm kind of sad I missed it. I chose baseball.
Well, a lot cooler where I was. I guarantee you that. And then, of course, as a community, we had just all kinds of other stuff. I set up through an app called Goose Chase. It was basically like you had to find something specific at every single city park, and then you had to take a picture of yourself at this specific place.
Wow.
And it was just getting people out, understanding what Brandon is, where some of the parks are located, what amenities they have, and just getting to know your local community. So we had 98 people participate in that.
Wow.
We had a Brandon history quiz that we gave away at the picnic, and there were prizes for that. And it was just a lot of stuff and a lot of fun.
I know. Just I can just see you just have this giant smile on your face, and your eyes are glowing as you're talking about all of this.
It's good.
And I'm sure that there's going to be some really cool photos that surface here. In the days after.
Yeah, hope so.
So one of the things that you mentioned when you first started talking about this is that that whole celebration, the whole sentiment behind this is to honor where Brandon's been, who Brandon is today, the city, not a person.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
and then what does it look like in the future?
Right.
So your perspective, I think, is a little bit unique because of your care, concern, and enjoyment for history. And I'd just love to hear whether it's, yours, sponsored by you, or things that, you talk about with the Historical Society folks. Where do you see Brandon going based on, where Brandon is today, the history of the community, and maybe the energy that's there currently?
Right. So it's a difficult question to answer. And it's my answer is going to be wrapped up in my other role as a teacher.
Absolutely.
Because when people say Brandon, or they automatically think either think of the city of Brandon or you think of the school.
Yep.
And one of the things that I think is essential and what is very unique about Brandon is the city and the school district's special relationship.
Yes.
I think that whether you've been in Brandon 2 years or 20 years, I think that, one of the major benefits, and this is not me tooting my own horn, but this is, I think, one of the major benefits. I think one of the major benefits of living in Brandon is the school district. You know, people want to move to Brandon because I think our schools are pretty darn good. And they want that quieter, small town feel, but yet still having some of those amenities that a decent sized town has. And so I think that what we're going to find is as more and more people move here and as the district grows, because it's growing.
Yes.
I mean, you know, over on your end of town, you know, there along that Veterans Parkway yep. corridor, it's going to explode. There's some housing, some land. I'm not at liberty to discuss it too much, but there's some land, the agricultural land that has yep. been sold around the Brandon city limits. And so that's going to explode. I mean, as a town, we are going to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And we have grown significantly. For example, when we incorporated 50 years ago in 1973, it was our population was about 1,400. And at the last census, it was over 11,000. So in 50 years, it's, you know, you do the math on that.
Yeah.
And so we're going to continue to grow. And with that are going to come some growing pains. But I think that as we do so, we're going to get more people, more visionaries, more doers, more volunteers, more businesses, more growth, more jobs. And I really see Brandon's future as a bright one.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking about as you're talking through all that growth and development, it was a couple months ago now, but I sat in at a morning breakfast for the chamber and mm-hmm. Superintendent Larson talked mm-hmm. about, you know, that there's some really assertive growth plans for schools and,
yes.
you know, repurposing of buildings
yes.
and stuff like that with,
yes.
with the school district. And let's talk about the school district for a moment, because it goes beyond the Brandon city limits. It's kind of a unique and perhaps expansive boundary line.
Yes.
So as a teacher and,
yes.
you know, seeing so many students that come in and out of those doors, because there's a lot of students in the high school. I think this is what, like the third edition that's going on?
Yeah.
I can't
yes.
keep track.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's the third one since I've been there, because, you know, we had the new gym. Mm-hmm. And the weight room and stuff like that. We had what was originally called the freshman house, which is now just kind of one of the yep. additions to the south. And then we're just opening up our other kind of northeast addition this fall.
So what is the expected student body
It'll
for the high school?
It'll be about 1,400 this year, about
wow.
1,400 students. So like, for example, my son's graduating class this year will be right around 350. But my daughter, who's a junior, her graduating class will be the first one over 400.
Wow.
And they're foreseeing that the rest of them will be 400 plus.
Ready or not, here they come.
Oh my goodness. You have no idea. It's crazy.
But yeah. that poses, I think, some unique situations mm-hmm. in that you've got kids that mm-hmm. are coming from different communities. You know,
yep.
you've got the district lines that go into Sioux Falls a little bit, but they also stretch north. They also mm-hmm. stretch south. So how do you see the way that the district is set up impacting the city or the community of Brandon?
Yeah, you know, it's a really, really good point. You know, a lot of people don't realize how big the Brandon Valley School District really is. It goes all the way up, well, where your family was by Renner,
yeah.
you know, all the way over to the Minnesota-Iowa border, all the way down to Harmerdon Park or by Harmerdon Park there to the south. And then a lot of people, like, for example, don't understand our biggest taxpayer is Menards on East 10th.
Mm-hmm.
That's still Brandon Valley School District, you know, and is for another block and a half behind that. So, you know, it does pose its unique challenges because I think you have a lot of people, again, who don't really have a whole lot of roots in Brandon and things of that nature. And I think that there's some local residents in Brandon who kind of meet with some resistance. You know, you have
yeah.
the townies and then the not.
I
you
love
know,
that townies.
You know, the townies.
I
you
haven't
know.
Heard that before.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it is a little bit of a thing. And that's not a knock on the native Brandonites, but, you know,
yeah.
they like to think of things and remember things the way they were. And sometimes that makes it a little more difficult to embrace what it is and what it will become.
Yeah.
You know, change isn't always comfortable for everyone,
yep.
you know. But then you also have, you know, it's interesting along other lines as well. You have, for example, we have a lot of ag kids still, some farm kids,
mm-hmm.
but the vast majority of our kids are no longer ag kids like they were maybe, say, 20, 25 years ago when Brandon was, you know, say, a town of 2,000,
right.
you know. So it does pose some unique challenges. Like you mentioned, repurposing of buildings. You know, can we stay on top of growth as far as building enough elementary schools? Where should they be located? I mean, our most recent elementary school was located by Harmerdon Park there on 41st, mm-hmm. you know,
across
East 41st.
Across the street from a Sioux Falls Middle School.
Across the street from a Sioux Falls Middle School, which, I mean, again, makes no sense because it's to the north. The way the district boundaries are, I mean, it's interesting, but it's like somebody gave a chimpanzee a marker and just started drawing around a little bit. But it's kind of crazy. And whoever did that, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to insult you, but yeah, it's just interesting. you know, and as a taxpayer, I live in Brandon, and as a taxpayer, some people balk at the higher property taxes, right, and things of that nature. However, think about what it's also done to your home value.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'll tell you, so my husband and I were Sioux Falls residents, but Brandon Valley School District,
right,
where we live. And it's close. I think if we were a quarter mile one way, mm-hmm, we're Sioux Falls School District. And there's a difference when you look at home value. Mm-hmm. But then also I'll just selfishly say my husband will be teaching in Brandon next year, and that's who I vote for school board. That's right, where my taxes
right,
go.
Right.
So I'm glad that's shaken out.
Right. And we're excited to have Tyler.
He's going to be great. Addition. Yes. Yeah. It'll be good.
Yeah.
But not to talk about my husband anymore, because he might get, if he listens to this, he's going to get a little flush, I think.
That's all right.
But thinking about, there is kind of that old school, new school, mm-hmm, attitudes, and, growth, I think, tends to create that, whether we like it or not, want or not, it kind of just creates that. Mm-hmm. And that influx of new energy, new people is great. And in general, growth is fun because more things happen, right, you get more.
Yep.
Yeah. I just think about all of the park enhancements, that are happening with the pool and out at Aspen and stuff like that. And that's a reflection of a growing community, but it also poses challenges. Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, all the kids that you get to come into contact with, all the things that you and your wife are involved in the community as a whole, do you have any suggestions? I would say maybe on both sides, maybe we'll use the word townies, but then they're not. Maybe those newer folks, maybe they're on the outskirts. Maybe they're like my husband and I, who live in Sioux Falls, but find themselves spending a lot of time in Brandon. Mm-hmm. What is your, analysis, if you will, of how those bridges get mended?
Yeah. And again, I'm not meaning this to be my default answer. I think that's where the school district plays an essential role, because that's the one thing that everybody has in common.
Yeah.
Whether you live in Brandon, whether you live in Sioux Falls, whether you live on a farm, 5 miles north of Corson, the school is the one thing that ties everybody together. And I think that's why Brandon is such a unique entity, because regardless of those circumstances, it's the one unifying factor that we all have. But it does pose some challenges, like you mentioned, for the school board and for the schools itself, as that, that piece that ties everybody together. How do you balance all of those wants and needs and desires of those competing individuals? It's very easy to point fingers and sling some mud and things like that. But, I mentioned this to Dr. Larson, I would never want his job ever. That would be a really, really hard job, because you're having to balance all of these interests, to which there's literally no right answer. But again, I think that's where at the school level, I think that's where a lot of those differences can be overcome. Again, the challenge, though, is, again, what should that look like? When growth happens, I think that the schools can be the amelioration of that. But where do they go? And I think that the school district has done a very wise thing and a natural thing by putting those schools out there. And, as a football coach and things like that, I think that it's really important for organizations school organizations to reach out to those schools and make sure that those kids know from day one that there are links, mm-hmm, to bring them into the larger community. And so I think that the school does a really good job, and it's a very essential job of, like you said, bridging that gap between, mm-hmm, maybe some of those different perspectives that are in some cases socioeconomic, in some cases geographic, in some cases maybe even, say, racial or things of that nature.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's a kind of the Band-Aid that covers a lot of that stuff, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot to go into that. And I think that we could probably spend a lot of time unpacking that. But as we start to kind of wrap up our conversation today, one of the things that you said at the very beginning when I asked you about history and the part that plays in growth and development and what things look like in the future, you said it was essential. Mm. And one of the things that I've been reflecting on as we've been talking through this is, for all of the transplants or fresh energy, new blood, lack of better phrasing, that maybe come to a community, any community, not necessarily just Brandon, how do you get immersed in the history? How do you understand what a community is before you find yourself living in it, or when you find yourself living in it?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. It really is. Yeah,
the easy questions are over.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The softballs are over. The underhand softball pitches. Because the reason I say it's so difficult is because if it were easy, organizations like Brandon Historical Society would have 800 members. You know, I mean.
Well, this is the call for membership. We'll post the link.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. I think part of it is exposure, you know, just letting people know that we're there. I don't think that that's ever a bad thing. But I think at some point people have to become self-aware as well, that if I am going to choose to live here, raise my family here, I would hope that at some point people would do their due diligence and try to understand a little bit more about the place that they've chosen to call home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, for example, I've lived in Brandon off and on almost my entire life. I didn't graduate from Brandon, but my mom and stepdad lived in Brandon. I actually live about a block and a half from where their house was. It's very strange to me. I still can't get over that.
At least it's not the same house.
That's true. That would be really weird. But understanding that, the place that you've chosen to call home and, again, raise your family, I think that it's incumbent upon people to take that step, to ingratiate themselves into the community, and to try to make that place as good of a place as you can make it. I mean, who wouldn't want to make their community a better place, not only for themselves, but for their families and for other people's families? And so I think that the more people can take it upon themselves to take that step, the better our communities are going to be.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. That's the call to get involved, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I a lot of people are like, well, I'm so busy. Okay. Let me tell you a story.
Well, we listed off how many that's what I was gonna you're say. Wearing.
You know, and like, for example, with the Optimist Club, what I tell people is when they join up, we don't expect you to come to every meeting. All we're asking for is like to volunteer 2 hours a year. You're telling me you can't give me 2 hours of your life a year.
Delete the social media apps.
That's right. That's right. I mean, you spend more on that on TikTok, or, you know, most people do. So, again, I just think it's a very easy excuse to say, I don't have time. And I understand that for a lot of people, life is crazy. I get it. Mm-hmm. However, if it's looking at the bigger picture, I think it's a sacrifice that is worth it.
Yeah. So in that same vein, you know, one of the things that we do here at the Sumentric Growth Alliance is we are empowering our communities, our members, to grow and develop. And a lot of times that comes in the form of land development, mm-hmm. or, you know, selling businesses, you know, those kinds of things. For any economic developer, anybody who's looking, you know, to put, you know, where rubber meets the road, brick and mortar, whatever analogy you want to use, what would you have to say about the city of Brandon and maybe things that, that we should be aware of, or that we should be thinking about as we're looking at the tangible, next growth, next developments of Brandon?
Well, I think, first of all, one of the things, and we touched on this a little bit already, is it's a community that's growing. You will have an influx of customers. You will have an influx of workers. So I think that's, obviously we're all you're in business to make money. And if you're going to where the customers are, you're probably going to be okay. The other thing I would argue, and one of the things that kind of makes Brandon a little unique, is our transportation location, right next to I-90, close to 229, close to 29. Mm-hmm. I think uniquely situated, depending on the type of business, of course. There's a reason why there's five trucking companies in Brandon. Yeah. I mean, it's right there.
Right.
The railroad comes through. I mean, I think that there's multiple factors. I think the city is pro business. I think they want to attract businesses. So I think, if you look at it in a variety of ways from a variety of perspectives, it would be a very wise decision to think of Brandon when you're thinking about, building a business or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. For sure. Mm-hmm. You were really serious about that comment, so I hesitated to throw in my joke. But, you know, I think your proximity to Yogi Bear is a really big selling point.
You know, it doesn't hurt. It sure doesn't hurt. I mean, you can send the kids on a little trampoline thing that they got there and stuff like that. It's well known. Yeah,
I like it. Oh, I like it.
Absolutely.
I used to have to drive past it every time on my way to school. So just imprinted
Yogi
there.
Yogi saying hi to you, huh?
Yes, for sure. Uh-huh. Well, as we talk about growth and development and, you know, businesses in mm-hmm. Brandon, you know, this question is coming. So you've had some time to think about it.
Yeah.
Tell us about your favorite hidden gem.
Well, I can't say the cabin anymore because that would be, you know, one of the things that I really enjoy, not just about Brandon, but the local area, is a lot of the parks. I'm a very outdoorsy guy. I like to be outdoors, even if I'm just reading a book. I don't want to be reading a book inside. I want to be reading a book outside. And so I think one of the things that's not really a hidden, everybody knows about it, but I just think it's undervisited, is Palisades.
Yeah.
Out in Gerritsen. I mean, just a beautiful area and the history of Gerritsen. There's lots of Risties, so they're good people.
They're doing some expansions out there.
Yeah, yeah.
The Risties would know that.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying. And I remember some of my best memories, obviously, as a teacher, you know, is spending some time with my children when they were younger, you know, during the summer. And Palisades was always one of their favorite places to go. They just really loved climbing around on the rocks and the river and things of that nature. So I think it's very, very cool. However, I would be remiss if I did not mention, you know, in our conversations prior, you know, you had mentioned, can I reveal yours?
Yeah.
Okay. The alibi, right?
Yes.
So there is literally a hidden gem, in my opinion. So not only am I a teacher, but I also work part-time at a craft brewery here in Sioux Falls called Severance. My friends own it. Great beer. But there is a little pub attached to the backside of Pizza Ranch in Brandon that very few people, more people are knowing more about it now, but it's called The Upper Room. One of my friends owns that as well.
Okay.
And all they serve is, well, not all, but they specialize in craft beers from a local craft beer. So they'll have Remedy, they'll have Severance, they'll have just all these places. And it's just a really fun place.
How many seats do they have?
Oh, I suppose you could probably fit maybe 75 people there. And then they just built a patio.
Okay.
So yeah, 50 to 75, but just super friendly atmosphere. You have to be looking for it.
Yeah.
But it's a fun place. If you enjoy craft beer, it's a really fun place to just relax and unwind and have some good local beer, support multiple local businesses, you know, with the craft beer scene in Sioux Falls exploding. And then now, of course, you know, reaching out into Brandon, allowing some of those local beers to be sold to Brandon residents. It's called The Upper Room.
It sounds kind of like a modern day speakeasy.
It is a little bit. It's kind of hidden.
Yeah. I've not heard of that one. And I'm a little bummed out that I'm glad I know now.
Yes. You should check it out. It's right behind, just to the east of Pizza Ranch.
Okay.
There's a little parking lot. Just go past Pizza Ranch and then take a right, and it's right behind there.
The Upper Room.
The Upper Room.
Do they sell food, any like bar food?
Well,
or?
they actually have an agreement with Pizza Ranch. So you can actually serve right there. They'll bring you your pizza. They'll bring you wings. They have like a specialized menu through Pizza Ranch. And
wow.
They have like puzzle nights and stuff like that. And they're actually doing a really, really good job of kind of getting more people there and stuff like that. It's super fun.
Yeah.
My wife and I try to go there as often as we can.
I like it.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for spending your time today talking about Brandon and your experiences and all the cookie jars that you've got your hands in.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's multiple ones, just like Yogi Bear.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet. Well, to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Growing Places. We hope you tune in again next time for another story about the people, places, and businesses that make the Sioux Metro the place to call home. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Growing Places. Visit us online at SiouxMetro.com and follow us on social media at SiouxMetro. And always leave things better than the way you found them.